Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Lost among the histories of the men who laid the cornerstones of the New World is the story of one of America's first astronomers, the Baltimore-born descendant of slaves and indentured servants, Benjamin Banneker, the unschooled wizard of the early 18th century. In a chapter entitled, The Secretary of Peace, Destination Freedom tells the Banneker story.
To get into Benjamin Banneker's life, you go back beyond the milestones by which Americans measure their freedom. Beyond wars and revolutions. Beyond the Civil War, Emancipation Day, the birthday of the 4th of July, and the crude cradle of the Constitution. And to the day when freedom was a timid seed in a new land. And into a village near the Palapsco River, 10 miles outside the city of Baltimore. The year 1775. A slave trader who'd heard of a possible purchase came with plans for profit. Ted Innes, the innkeeper, recognized the visitor.
I see, Mr. Driver, you've come back. A mug of ale, sir?
It's not for ale. I've ridden 10 miles, you know it.
For what you've come, you can ride 10 more miles. We'll have none of it. Get out.
Does your wife still run your affairs, Mr. Innes?
Mr. Driver's here on important business, Annie.
Selling slaves? It's the devil's business.
Annie, please. When Mr. Driver's got business on his mind, he's always in a hurry. Now, sir?
This Freeman we were talking about the last time I passed through here, Banneker.
Yes.
How do I get to him?
Well, he lives with his sister in that farm building I pointed out.
I know that. But how can I take him off without causing a row in the village? They were fond of this Freeman. You said so yourself. The villagers wouldn't let a slave trader carry him off. You said you knew a way.
For the right price, I'll show you the right way.
You wouldn't sell a man into slavery.
It's him or us, Annie. Either we get money to pay back what we've borrowed, or the British will have us in jail. You want that? Then keep quiet, woman. This is business.
This is betraying our neighbor.
Do you know another way of getting the money?
Of course she doesn't. Annie's a practical woman, too. She won't let her kindness kill her. Now, Miss Banneker, my men can't ride in and kidnap him. Can't snatch him from the village.
No, not like that. Other slave traders have tried it. Most people in the village used to feel he was one of them. They might still defend him.
I can't fight a village.
Well, if you wait, you won't have to.
What do you mean?
I need you.
Annie! Customers are coming in. Get up front, serve them.
Very well.
You say, if I can wait. How long?
Oh, a month or two.
What's happening?
Well, I've told you about this man.
Yes, the peacemaker of the village. Intercedes in other people's quarrels, counsels, advises, sticks his nose into their affairs.
Exactly. And you know the popularity of a peacemaker is a short-lived thing. I expect Banneker's to run out soon, very soon. I expect the villagers would agree that perhaps other men, even slave dealers, could be more useful to us than a man who's good only for talk.
What are you saying?
I say there's quite a few things the people need in the village. Real things. Money to pay taxes.
I can't buy off all of you.
Then bring in goods. Goods from England. There's not a good clock in the entire village.
A clock?
Oh, there's a sundial here and there, but... Now, if you could present me with one of those finely made timepieces that come from London, I could prove to the villagers that a slave trader's better to have as a neighbor, economically speaking, Mr. Driver, than a potential slave like Banneker. A clock would do it.
They're not easy to get.
I know that.
I'll bring it.
One clock will get you one slave named Banneker.
And there was a bargain struck between the slave dealer and the innkeeper. The clock was sent for, and it came. A tall timepiece finished in the shops of London. The innkeeper set it inside his cart and took it around the village with the slave dealer. And the folks marveled at the magnificent workmanship and wondered who had given such a gift to the village.
No. It's a delicate thing, my friend. Don't be crowding the cart. It'll be here.
You mean it's staying in the village? It's ours?
It's my property, friend. What's mine is my neighbor's, including my ale, for a price.
Who gave it to you, Highness? Who sent it?
Well, now, if you'll hold your tongues quiet, please, I'll tell you. Now, he's a man you all know for his industry and his great interest in the village. His love for his fellow man. His ability to help others as well as his willingness.
Benjamin Banneker.
Benjamin. Where'd Benjamin get money to buy a clock?
Banneker had nothing to do with it. Banneker preaches. This man produces. Some of you may not like his business, but I tell you it's better than that of Banneker. Mr. Driver, will you stand and let the people see their friend?
That's Mr. Driver.
He's going to become one of us, providing he can do business here. Is that right, Driver?
Well, it sure is, gentlemen. As sure as this clock will strike, it's right. I can get clocks enough for everyone.
Now, don't crowd around, folks. Plenty of time to shake Mr. Driver's hand later on. And there's more clocks where this one came from. He knows how to keep a bargain. Agadee up, mule! Idiot!
The innkeeper drove home his point to the neighbors. Drove around while the crowds grew and gaped at the London timepiece. Then drove over to the Banneker house and invited the village peacemaker out to meet the slave driver.
Banneker! Oh, Banneker! Is Benjamin Banneker home? Casey, go knock on his door.
Right.
It's a shame not to let him see what Mr. Driver's given us. Go ahead, knock on the door.
What do you want with my brother? Yeah. Well, is there a feud in the village again? What is it?
Maria, wake up your brother.
What do you want with him?
Send him out here. A newcomer's here to live in the village. Somebody your brother's got to meet sooner or later.
Hey, Benjamin! Come on, man.
The crowd called for the freeman and sent an emissary in to bring him out. And he came. A tall, thin man dressed in broadcloth and a long waistcoat. His head covered with a thick coat of gray hair.
Well, Benjamin, aren't you going to welcome your new neighbor, Mr. Driver?
I thought there was no welcome for slave dealers in the village.
You thought wrong. There's no welcome for idlers and busybodies. For people who add to the wealth of the community, there's always welcome. Isn't that right, folks? Mr. Driver's given us something we've needed a long time. A clock that strikes, imported from Europe. You admire it?
Oh, I do. Yes, it's a very beautiful piece of machinery. It's a pity we can't make them here in America.
Then you'll have to admit the man who's got power enough to secure one for us deserves to have his opinions heard here. He's got some mighty interesting opinions about slavery.
I've heard of Mr. Driver's opinions before. We've talked about them. The villagers have been against slaveholders.
Don't see why they shouldn't reconsider. Only one in the village who's likely to become a slave's you. You wouldn't stand in the way of progress, would you now, Benjamin?
My stand on the matter is known to all. I was born a freedman. I paid for my freedom with my labor and my work here in the village.
Peace talk is not much to pay.
I've grown up here. All I've learned of mechanics, I've learned here. I've said that once you invite a man inside the village to enslave one man, he'll grow strong enough to enslave all of you.
Mr. Driver's a benefit to the community, and anyone can see it. Would you recommend that the village keep his gift, the clock?
Hey, we need a clock.
You see, folks, he admits it himself.
We not only need a clock, but we need to know how to make them ourselves and not be bought off by the first tyrant who's able to import one. The brains and hands that made this clock are no greater than the brains and hands we have here in the village. We can make them ourselves.
You see what a talker he is? Make a clock. It's taken the best craftsmen in London decades to make a clock, and he asks you to make one.
It would be better if we made our own, if the price of importing one is going to be our freedom.
Your freedom, Benjamin, my good neighbor. Not ours, yours. We need the clock more than we need your rabble talk. Wouldn't the village do well to have such a clock? Wouldn't it now?
Yes, we need the clock. We need it.
The village would be better if they knew how to make clock themselves.
And who will be the craftsman to teach them?
I will.
Ah, he's talking nonsense. He knows nothing about clock.
I can learn if you give me time. And then I can teach others.
He's stalling. He knows better. Mr. Driver sent all the way to Europe to bring you a timepiece, and what will Banneker bring you? Now, Mr. Driver's a busy man.
Just a minute here. It's true that my trade keeps me very busy. Your neighbor here has so little liking for my trade that he wants me kept out of the village. He says he can make a clock. I say he's a fraud, and you should get rid of frauds. If he can make a clock, let him prove it.
You hear that, Benjamin?
I expected it.
When shall we expect to see a clock?
Well, a clock's not made overnight.
Well, don't ask for a lifetime.
Give me time to think about it a while and examine the European clocks.
No. Don't listen to him. He'll piece together some old clocks and palm them off as his own.
I'll make every piece myself. I'll fit it together myself. Give me a month time. Surely the slave seller can wait that long.
For you, Banneker, I'd wait even 2 months.
Then I'll take the 2 months.
You're uncertain of yourself. Your uncertainty assures me. In 2 months, folks, you heard him. He'll make the first clock that's been made in America. And Banneker.
Yes?
You must remember that the test of a good clock is that it runs and tells time correctly, strikes properly, and relieves the country of the necessity of sending to Europe for parts to repair it. Very well. I think we'd better be about our business.
The villagers shook their heads and left him alone. The slave seller asked the last question of the innkeeper.
You're sure he's had no training in the craft?
Even if he has, where'll he get the parts to fit together?
You're right. He was stalling for time. My men will watch and see that he doesn't slip away from the village. You've earned your clock.
The village peacemaker sat down that evening with his sister Maria and decided on his way of escape.
We'll get out and go to Canada, Benjamin. There's still plenty of friends in the village who'll help you escape.
I know a surer way to escape.
What is it?
I'll carry through my bargain. I'll make the clock.
You can't.
I can, Maria. And by making it, I'll strike a blow at the slave dealers everywhere. The people here and in Baltimore will hear about it. They'll see that a trained freedman can produce better than if he were a slave. Now you go to Baltimore, get me whatever clocks and watches you can find. I'll study them. I'll learn to make the pieces that go into them. I'll work on the clock.
He gathered clocks from Baltimore, studied their wheels and their movements, applied the scraps of mathematics he had mastered in the freedman's school, went to the woods and brought back walnut and oak branches, and sat on his porch whittling and shaping the pieces into wheels and levers. And as the weeks went by, curious crowds gathered outside the Banneker home to see the sight of the man who was trying to make the first American clock. And in the evenings, the innkeeper would drive by and inspect his progress and remind him of the time.
Hey, Banneker.
Yes, Ernest?
A month's gone by and all you've got's a pile of shavings and blocks of wood. Admit you're a fraud, and Mr. Driver will find a kind master to sell you to. Can't you answer?
Come back in 2 weeks, and I'll have your answer.
And the innkeeper came back and saw the mass of wood and blocks shaping into a clock, neatly carved and standing on Banneker's porch.
Never mind, Inez. The test of a clock's, like I said, not by the looks, but by the time it keeps. It's easy enough to imitate the frame. It's the little wheels inside that are impossible to make. He's got another week.
And at the end of the week, Banneker may have made all of the parts of his clock and set about fitting the puzzle together.
I think I finished it, Maria.
Let me look at it.
The,
what? It looks exactly like the clock the slave dealer gave the village.
The same. Only every part of it was made here in the village. I've checked it and measured every wheel. I've made it to strike the hour. Now, the pendulum should start it.
Is something wrong?
I don't know. I'll start it again. There is something wrong, Mariah. There's something out of place.
If there is, it's too late to fix it. I see the innkeeper and the villagers coming down the road.
It's the pendulum. I've got to cut another pendulum. Now, hold them off until I've finished.
Banneker worked over the pendulum of his clock while the neighbors gathered out on the porch, and the innkeeper became impatient.
Banneker! Will you come out or shall we drag you out? Banneker!
Banneker, come on out.
There he is.
There's no need to come in after me. I know my time is up.
Mr. Driver's here to see this clock of yours.
Yes, we brought ours along to demonstrate to the people here how a real clock should work.
Oh, I see. Mariah, help me lift the clock out on the porch.
All right, Benjamin.
Banneker and his sister Mariah lifted the heavy oaken piece out on the porch in view of the villagers, set it down, compared it with the slave dealer's clock.
Compares well on the surface, but I've said the test.
In just a moment, we'll compare the time it keeps. Ben, are you ready?
I think so, Mariah. Start the pendulum.
Well, it ran for 5 seconds. You did well. Now I'll start my clock.
Just a minute. The wheels are a little stiff. They'll loosen. You'll stand back.
Let's go on again. Just accomplish something.
Stopped again.
Banneker started his clock again and again. And finally, as he balanced the pendulum, it began to swing and didn't stop. The innkeeper and the slave dealer matched its timing with the London clock and found it the same.
A few minutes is no test. Takes hours. Perhaps a few days and this contraption will be useless. We'll watch it.
They watched. And slowly the villagers were satisfied and went away whispering about the miracle they'd seen. And when the clock struck 2 in the afternoon, the innkeeper and the slave dealer drifted away, came back day after day, and finally admitted what their eyes told them. The first American clock had been made. It kept time for 20 years. The news of the Banneker clock caught the attention of mathematicians and craftsmen in the new colonies. And the clockmaker's reputation grew until it came to the attention of the Ellicotts. Now, the Ellicotts were surveyors and scientists from Pennsylvania. George Ellicott came to visit the craftsmen.
I understand you're regarded as somewhat of a wizard here in Maryland.
My neighbors are very kind to me.
I'm committed to hire someone to help survey the roads from Frederick to Baltimore. You know something of mathematics?
I've taught myself something.
Do you know anything of trigonometry, calculus, differential equations?
I'm afraid I've never heard of them.
Tales of your powers have been quite exaggerated, I see.
Perhaps if I could see some textbooks on the subject, sir, I could help.
We surveyors don't have time to start educating every hired hand we need.
If I could look at the textbooks.
We'll forget the textbooks for a while. What you know already will be good enough for the work you'll do. Come with me.
The clockmaker went to survey the roads of Maryland, help lay out the plans for its highways, and when the work was done, noticed in the library of his employer books on astronomy.
Well, what is it now?
I said I'd like to study some of your textbooks, if you don't mind.
Well, what good will they do you?
I'm not sure. But all I know is that It was my studying and remembering the scraps of learning that dropped down to me that helped me to remain free. I think if I knew more, I could help show others the way, just as I showed them how to make a clock.
You've got strange notions in your head, Banneker. There's a constitutional convention going on now in Philadelphia. They're attending to the matters of freedom. They need no help from you.
Still, I'd like to borrow the textbooks.
They're on astronomy, predictions about the next eclipse, charts, and other solar matters. If you're willing to addle your brain, you may examine them.
Banneker took the books on astronomy and lunar tables, became fascinated by the study of the stars and planets. He reversed his habits of a lifetime, and at night he would be seen lying on the ground for hours, gazing at the sky, while at dawn he came home to check the textbooks and to sleep. And in his readings, he had seen something in the tables and textbooks that took him to Ellicott, the surveyor.
You're letting your imagination run away with you, Benjamin.
Nevertheless, I believe the text is an error on the prediction of the next solar eclipse.
How in the world would you know?
By going over the calculations set down by the astronomers you gave me to study. There's an error in their calculations. Here, I'll show you.
Banneker, the clockmaker, carefully recalculated the lunar tables and checked with the surveyor the correct calculations for the solar eclipse. And when he had finished, the surveyor was a changed man.
I don't see how you've learned to make the computations without help. But if there's an eclipse on the hour and day you say, every astronomer in the colony has been wrong. If you're right, I'll see that President Washington hears about it. A scientist who can predict an eclipse more accurately than the nation's astronomers is needed by the government. We'll wait. We'll see.
The surveyor waited until the day and the hour Banneker had picked for the solar eclipse, saw the calculations of the best scientists of the day fall short, and on the hour Banneker had predicted, the eclipse fell over Maryland. And soon after the shadows of the eclipse had passed over the Maryland fields, a message came to the new astronomer. It was a message from the Secretary of State.
My dear Mr. Banneker, I've been asked by President Washington to invite you to serve on the commission under France's Major L'Enfant to survey the District of Columbia and to help lay out plans for the new capital of the United States. Your work here will prove to the new nation that the powers of the mind are disconnected with the color of the skin. With great esteem, sir, Thomas Jefferson.
He went with the French engineer, L'Enfant, and carefully laid out the plans for the new capital at Washington, D.C., and he returned to his village 10 miles outside of Baltimore, buried himself deep in scientific work. And one evening, when the resentful innkeeper riddled his house with bullets, he crept into his house wounded, wrote a letter to the Society of Mathematicians, of which he had become a new member, and declared,
"Standing at my door, I heard the discharge of a gun, and in 4 or 5 seconds of time after the discharge, the bullets came rattling about me, one or two of which struck the house, another struck me, which plainly demonstrates not only the animosity of my neighbor, which is scientifically unimportant at this moment, but demonstrates that the velocity of sound is greater than that of a bullet, which you gentlemen are interested in."
He probed the life of the locust and honeybees. And the farmers in Maryland went to his doorstep and came away with the solutions to farm problems. And odds and ends of information reached the ears of one of the signers of the Constitution, James McHenry, who called in the self-made scientist.
"The things you've learned in your lifetime, Banneker, can't be kept inside one man's mind without losing them as you grow older. I've arranged with the firm of Goddard and Angle of Baltimore to publish your findings in any way you choose, if you're willing to collect them."
I'm willing.
"What form will you put them in?"
I'd like to take the form Ben Franklin took to spread his findings.
I'd like to publish my findings in an almanac every year.
The Almanac of Benjamin Banneker was circulated each year through the eastern states and became a guide for surveyors and astronomers, farmers and civil servants. And one year, his findings included a proposal he wanted to reach the desk of President Jefferson.
President Jefferson, Mr. Banneker, is not in the habit of reading almanacs. Now, if you could perhaps write him a letter, I'd be glad to forward it to him.
I think President Jefferson will be interested in the findings I've made this year. You've still got the ear of the president, Mr. McHenry. Will you see that my almanac gets to his desk?
Well, I'll carry it that far. But I'm not to take the consequences if he's annoyed at your insisting that he see this.
I understand.
Very well. Your findings will be where President Jefferson can't help but read them.
The almanac of Banneker lay open on the desk of the president. In the morning, he read the astronomer's proposal.
Among the many defects which have been pointed out in the federal constitution by its enemies, it is much to be lamented that no person has taken notice of its total silence upon the subject of an office of the utmost importance to the welfare of the United States. That is, an office for promoting and preserving perpetual peace in our country and throughout the world.
The president, who had authored the Declaration of Independence, studied the proposal, turned it over to his aides, and one replied.
A very interesting proposal, Mr. President, but this is hardly the time to speak of creating a new cabinet post, especially a secretary of peace, now when we're at war with the Indians. This is hardly the time.
And in his almanac, the astronomer replied.
It is to be hoped that no objections will be made to the establishment of such an office while we are engaged in the war with the Indians. For as the War Office of the United States was established in the time of peace, it is equally reasonable that a peace office should be established in the time of war.
And the president studied the Banneker proposal, sent it to the secretary of the Academy of Sciences in Paris, and when the response to it was not forthcoming, sent it back to the astronomer and questioned him on the duties a secretary of peace would have. And the answer came.
The secretary of peace shall be a man free from all present absurd and vulgar prejudices, who will inspire in the people a veneration for human life, abolish capital punishment, and do away with all armed forces, weapons, and other military paraphernalia. For were there no uniforms, there probably would be no armies.
And with his proposal circulating throughout the world, the little astronomer who had began life as a peacemaker in his village near Baltimore returned home to await the world's answer to his proposal. But the shadows gathered around him before the answer could come. And one Sunday in October of 1806, the dark shadows of eternal night settled over him. The Secretary of Peace was dead.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Benjamin Banneker, mathematician and astronomer of the 18th century. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced by Homer Heck. The role of Benjamin Banneker was played by Fred Pinkard. Others were Janice Kingslow, Harvey Hayes, George Kluge, Jack Lester, Sid McCoy, and Tony Parrish. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week, when Destination Freedom will tell the story of Henry Armstrong, boxing's triple title holder. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.